it is a celebration and sort of a breaking down of the components of entrepreneurial thinking, which can be applied just about anywhere. But it's really thinking through questions of, you know, how do you leverage what the best entrepreneurs do to transform your own thinking?
Here we are recording. This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is Dori Clark. She is the author of Entrepreneurial You and Reinventing You, as well as Stand Out. I think you got four books actually, right?
I've got three and I'm working on the fourth right now.
Oh, okay. What's the fourth one?
The new one that I'm working on is a book that is going to be coming out probably in 2021 from Harvard Business Review Press, and it is about long-term thinking.
Oh, I like it. Okay, and we can wait for it because that would just show we have delayed gratification.
It's very meta. That's exactly right.
Well, first of all, we met through John Levy's Influencer Salon. And first of all, thank you also for being on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here, Michael. Thanks.
Okay, so you're known as one of the top 50 business thinkers in the world, and that was named by Thinkers 50. So what sort of clients do you work with and what sort of problems do you solve?
So one of the big drums that I like to beat in my business is about the importance of diversification, which especially comes in handy during times of disruption like the one that we're in. And so I have kind of a B2B and a B2C arm of my business. The business-to-business part is that, at least when there's not a pandemic, I spend a lot of my time doing keynote speaking. And so I travel around and speak to corporations and conventions and associations about business and talent and careers, the future of work, things like that. And then I also have a B2C component where I do executive coaching and a lot of online courses specifically aimed at entrepreneurs and professional service providers, occasionally really ambitious people who work inside corporations, to help them figure out how they can get their ideas heard and recognized and really grow their brand in a noisy world.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there. So,
yeah, man, there's a lot there.
I love it. So you're kind of, it sounds like you kind of bridge between entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs, right? Like you have a little bit of both?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the same principles at play. I think it's really a question of people being motivated to apply them.
And so what, for an entrepreneurial you, what's kind of the thesis of that? And that, is that targeted at both audiences or?
Yeah, entrepreneurial you is definitely aimed at both audiences. I think in part, it is a celebration and sort of a breaking down of the components of entrepreneurial thinking, which can be applied just about anywhere. But it's really thinking through questions of, you know, how do you leverage what the best entrepreneurs do to transform your own thinking? So it's about, okay, you have no money. What do you do then? How do you operate within that constraint? Or okay, you have an incredibly short period of time to work with. How do you make that work in your favor? Those are things that anyone can apply in their professional life. And in addition to that, the piece that is near and dear to my heart is it really walks through the question of how people can create multiple income streams in their business. And I argue, even if people have a day job, it is really important to start thinking about this because we are so careful in our society. I mean, if people know one thing about investing, they know, oh, okay, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't put all your money in one stock, right? But when it comes to how we earn the money, we're basically doing just that. If you have a day job and that goes away, it's often really precarious. So I encourage entrepreneurs to develop multiple income streams to diversify, and for people who work inside corporations to actually start thinking about nurturing a side gig, whether it's a podcast like this or starting to write ebooks or maybe doing a little coaching on the side, because it really provides a valuable skills building tool and also an insurance policy for yourself for the future.
I love it. And that's actually near and dear to my heart because I think I'm, I don't know if you know, I'm trying to write a second book. I shouldn't say try, it's pretty much written, but, and it's interesting because the themes are consistent, which, you know, I'm evangelizing saying the way to diversify and scale your business is to look at a conglomerate model.
Yes. Yes.
And part of that is looking at this Japanese keiretsu model. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with the keiretsu in Japan. It's funny.
No, tell me more.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's funny because nobody knows what it is now, but I think in the 80s, it was a big deal.
Yeah, everything Japan was a big deal in the 80s.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly, right? And really where the keiretsu came in was, if you go back to 1945, when Japan was just leveled after the war, the U.S. was occupying it and they clued in. They were trying to crush the what they thought was anti-competitive behavior, but what they realized was that they have this structure of cooperation between companies in different categories of business. And they all work, it's like you'll have one brand like a Mitsubishi or a Sumitomo, and they organize around a bank. So I'm saying what you're saying is like, let's do this for smaller companies.
Yeah, super interesting. I really like that, Michael.
Yeah, not to divert it, but that's why I'm kind of, so your approach to encouraging people to monetize their expertise and like create other lines of income, like what's kind of the approach there? Like how would someone do that when they work with Dory?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the main way I think about it. I mean, the first objection that sometimes comes to people's mind is, oh, but how can you diversify? That's just going to take my eye off the ball. I'm going to be pulled in too many places. I don't have enough time. This is going to be a distraction. And the truth is, it would be if you were diversifying into wildly different areas, right? If you are a lawyer and a legal expert, and suddenly you say, you know what, I'm going to open a car wash and I'm going to start breeding horses. I mean, you know, that's
they probably
great.
Do both, but
you can probably do all those things, but each of them has different customers. It has it's different worlds you're operating in. It's vastly different skill sets. And so that takes a long time to cultivate. Really the main thing that I'm advocating for is saying, okay, how can I take my core expertise? How can I take my core IP and leverage it in a lot of different ways so that, number one, you're reaching customers who you're not reaching now, because maybe you've only been, you know, a good example in these times, maybe you've only been offering in-person services and there are mm-hmm. people in Europe or in Asia or whatever that really would love to work with you, but hey, they can't fly to Southern California, right? Every other thing. Now, all of a sudden, you're opening that up and creating new possibilities for yourself by changing the mechanism through which you are offering your services. So that's one way. Another thing to ask is, well, am I forcing people into a certain way of consuming my services, and maybe they want something different? I mean, there's plenty of people who say, oh, well, I only do one-on-one coaching. That's right. It. But maybe somebody doesn't want that or they can't afford that. What if you turned it into an online course and you were able to offer it at a tenth the price and therefore reach a whole new audience of people that were not your consumers before but wanted to be?
And I noticed you kind of like practice this, obviously, right? Because you have a number of courses on writing and making more time, for example. So you've obviously applied this to your own business. And what have kind of the results been, or what role does that play in your own work as an example?
Yeah, this has been an interesting and powerful test during the past few months of the pandemic. As I mentioned, Michael, a big part of my business has been over the past 5 or 6 years, keynote speaking. And so I would give probably 40 or 50 talks over the course of a year on average. Wow. So, you know, basically every week almost, I would be on a plane somewhere traveling around. I was going to be gone 3.5 out of 4 weeks in April. That was actually going to be my busiest month of the year. I had engagements in Russia, in Egypt,
oh, wow.
in Dallas, in Vancouver. I was going to all kinds of things. They all got canceled. So in theory, that's a situation where your revenue, you know, might in fact drop sure. to zero. Now the good news is some of those have been rescheduled or they've come up with something, but you would be in a pretty dire situation if that was the only thing you did. And I actually have a lot of colleagues that are simply professional speakers, and things are very, very bleak for them right now. But something that I have been doing since 2014 is really trying to build up plans around online courses and experiment with that. And it wasn't certainly because I was smart enough to know there was going to be a pandemic, but I was very aware that there was probably going to be a recession. You know, I mean, that's something that's reasonably predictable. And it is a pretty universal truth that whenever there's a recession, conference budgets are usually the first thing that gets cut. Yep. So I said, well, how do I protect against that? And so 6 years ago, I started trying different experiments, learning about online courses. And I actually made a goal for myself in the beginning of 2019. So about a year and a half ago now, that by the end of 2020, 50% of my income was going to come from passive sources and online courses.
Okay.
And I'm pretty much there at this point.
Great. That's awesome. So the courses being one of them, are there other more digital or, you know, kind of passive goods that you're building, or is that kind of your avenue is just to keep adding courses? Or?
Online courses are sort of the quintessential passive income, because you do it once and then it keeps you keep being able to sell it. Yeah. But there's a lot of virtual offerings that I have created or transformed. One of the revenue streams that I've had over time that's been quite successful was I would do a half-day strategy session for people, and they would fly in from New York. People would come in from, you know, from all over, not necessarily the world, but from all over North America.
Yeah.
You know, literally cities all over, they would fly in, come into New York for a day or two, and we would roll up our sleeves and do these strategy sessions together. That also became problematic in March. And I had two on the books, which had to be canceled. And so I had never offered them virtually before, but I converted the offering, have now done about half a dozen of them, and have figured out the mechanics to do it, which now makes it available worldwide. I was not sure if I'd be able to deliver it to the same level of quality, but I actually have decided in some ways it's better, because when you're doing it from remote, you can record it on Zoom. And so people have they have the record of it.
I love it. So it's interesting to see that, because it's almost like now you don't have all this, you know, they either does the client cost of moving around, of hotels and all the travel expenses, and you probably can do a lot more of them.
That's exactly right. Yeah. It's pretty easy to be able to, you know, sit here for a morning, get to the meat of it. You know, I think that in some ways I was probably a little too concerned with the trappings that, oh, well, we're going to have breakfast and I'll take you to my club and we'll do all the things. Yeah. But in some ways, I mean, that's wonderful. That is a cool experience. Cool, huh? But really the reason people are signing up is they want the business advice. And that is something that you can do absolutely from remote. I'm curious, Michael, how have you pivoted your business during this time?
I have had to deal with the flood of everybody needing to automate everything.
I can believe it. Yeah. So
I think if anything, I've already been operating this way. It was just like the volume of people that have problems big and small is like way bigger. So if you talk to anyone that I've talked to, any of people in agencies, and agencies seem to be very, very, very busy right now. And whether that's, you know, a digital e-commerce side, or in my case, like CRM and marketing automation, there's just a lot of work right now.
Yeah.
But I think it's like projects that people put off because it's like they put up with the pain, and then you look at it and you go, wow, this is really solvable, or it's a really big mess. Either way, like, how did you not just deal with it? And with, I think similar to you, like, it's pushed people to make the changes that you maybe before didn't have the pressure to make.
Yeah, so I think that's right on. I mean, all of the sort of structural changes in how business is moving, I mean, I think there are things that probably would have happened anyway eventually, but it would have been over whatever, a 5-year period, a 10-year period, and now it was over a 2-week period. It's crazy.
It's so funny, because I think if you go back to, like, you know, November, I remember having this thought in November, which was, because I was doing so much research about the Keiretsu and World War II and how that played into the Japanese miracle, which is recovery from ashes, literally like nuclear ashes. And I was like, you know, we don't really have this one unifying thing that causes like a drop in the middle of something really to cause future ripples of opportunity. And then of course this happens. and I think what you look at out of Japan was they built back bigger, stronger from scratch. They weren't, you know, they obviously had traditions, but they were suddenly, there's a new philosophy, there's a new impetus to rebuild and grow. And it's almost like, I feel like that's what this is going to be, right? I feel like we've got this tumultuous event that people are very adaptive. And as long as you're in an environment where you still have the freedom to do it, we have to keep fighting for that apparently, then there's going to be some amazing things that come out of it. I think that's what we're going to look back in 10 years and see.
Yeah, that's amazing. You should write an op-ed about that, actually. I think, you know, it can be a teaser for your book. I think that would be really interesting.
I probably need some encouragement there. So that's a good push for me to write. I feel guilty about writing. I don't know what it is. I feel like it's for me, you know? And then I'm like, no, just don't do that thing. Go work, you know?
But it is important. It's for the world, Michael. People want to know. People want to learn this stuff.
Yeah, I have this weird thing. It's so weird because I have this tinge of like, listen, that's just self-indulgent. Don't do that. But I will take that as encouragement and I will write an op-ed on it.
I think that would be fantastic. I will line up to read it.
You can help edit it.
There we go.
Yeah, I tend to be very stream of consciousness, and then you got to deal with the shrapnel later. So, okay. So I want to be conscious of your time. So a couple things. One is there anything we haven't touched on that you think is important for people to think about?
You know, I think we've covered a lot of really important themes. I'll just say that part of what animated me to be interested in this topic to begin with was actually, you know, now we have plenty to draw from in our recent collective consciousness, but whether it's pandemics or 2008's crash or whatever, but for me, the sort of origin story of how I got attuned to the need to create multiple revenue streams was that in 2001, I was working as a journalist. It was actually my first job out of graduate school. And I got laid off one day, oh, wow. Which in 2001 was very surprising. It was not like,
I remember, you know, this day probably.
Yes. And the really unfortunate thing from a searching for employment perspective was that the day they chose to lay me off was Monday, September 10th, 2001.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So waking up the next morning and saying, la, 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 I'm going to go look for a job. It was like, oh, maybe not. And I realized how precarious our finances could be. You know, I worked for this, you know, super, super cheap paper, and they gave me 4 days of severance pay.
Wow. Oh my God. So it's 4 days. That's, you're lucky.
I know, right?
Wow,
big spenders.
Were you in New York at that time?
I was in Boston.
You were in Boston then. Okay.
Yeah. Great. So I had to scrap for it. And it really seared it into me that you want an insurance policy. And, you know, one of the stories that I tell in my book, Entrepreneurial You, is about a guy that you may follow, Michael, in the podcasting world, named Pat Flynn.
Oh, yeah.
And he's the creator of the Smart Passive Income podcast. Right. And the way he got his start, you may or may not know his story, but he was an employee at an architecture firm. And during the 2008 recession, he got laid off from it. And he had been sort of, he was not yet an architect, but he'd been sort of training to be an architect. And along the way, he had to take his LEED exam, you know, for green building certification. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a complicated process. So he created a blog or a website that was basically capturing his study notes. And it became, you know, it was a, you know, thorough website. So it became pretty highly trafficked. And he had this idea at a certain point. He's like, oh, you know what? I wonder if people would actually be interested in reading all this material, not just blog page after blog page, but in a book. And so he put it together. It's just this kind of simple PDF book. He sold it for 20 or 30 bucks on his website. And he ended up his first month selling $7,900 worth of these books. It was insane.
Oh, that's crazy.
And sure enough, a month or two later, he gets laid off from his job, and it becomes the lifeline for him that showed him, hey, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can be an entrepreneur instead, rather than freaking out in the middle of this crisis.
Oh, so, wow. That's crazy. I'll have to go check out his podcast, because that's he's done very well since then, right?
He has. Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely become a very popular business podcast. So, you know, when we cultivate these projects on the side, it can become a pretty cool tool and an insurance policy for folks. I'll just mention too that if people are interested in exploring this more, I actually have a free resource, which is an 88 question self-assessment about thinking through your own entrepreneurial side income streams and how to get that started. And folks could get it at doryclark.com/entrepreneur.
So we'll put that in the show notes. It's Dorie Clark without an E on the end .com, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's just at /entrepreneur is the self-assessment.
That's amazing. What a crazy story about Pat Flynn too. I didn't realize that that's how he got started. And I'm very aware of the Smart Passive Income podcast. I mean, it's now kind of a staple out there for entrepreneurs, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love it. Do you do a podcast, or are you more of a guest?
I do not have my own podcast. No, I just leech off of other people's. So thanks for having me.
Great guests. Because I think when I first met you on the Influencer Salon, everyone was like, wow, she sounds really good. Is she on radio? And I was like, well, she's got a good voice and a nice microphone.
Powerful combination. Thank you, Michael.
Gotta be a podcaster.
I am on a lot of webinars and I do a lot of sort of online presentations. So I figured I needed to, especially with the pandemic, I decided I needed to level up the microphone game.
Oh, awesome. I think I might have to do the same eventually. I've been running around with the little one here, but we'll see how it goes. Maybe I'll get some of those big booming ones that look really impressive.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to wrap with a few questions. First off is, how do people get in touch with you?
Yeah, thank you so much. The best place to grab me is through my website. I have more than 700 free articles available there that I've done for places like Harvard Business Review and Forbes and Entrepreneur, plus the self-assessment that I mentioned, and that's just at doryclark.com.
I love it. All right, a couple questions, and this one comes from someone that you've interviewed before, and I think for your book, because he informed me that I stole it from him, and I found out from his friend that he stole it from Jim Rohn, so... If you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with, who do you, Dory, spend the most time with?
Yes. You want me to name five? All five?
Man, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I would say, yeah, in the pandemic, it's sharply gone down. But the people that I primarily spend time with, and I do love this question. I think it's so powerful to think about. I have a close friend named Alyssa Cohn, who is my business partner. We invest in Broadway shows together.
Wow! What?
Yeah, that's a hobby of mine, and I roped Alyssa into that. And so I spend a lot of time with her plotting about that. And you know, she also featured her in a couple of my books, Reinventing You and Entrepreneurial You. She's an executive coach, and so that's a big one. Another good friend is my friend Jenny Blake, author of Pivot, which is a book about professional reinvention. So it's kind of I like to think of it as like a sister book to mine, Reinventing You. She is a podcaster and has a great show called The Pivot Podcast. I try to be very responsible, Michael, and so I call my mother almost every day.
Mom, still in the picture there. That's
great. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, she is 82, and I've got to keep tabs on her to make sure she's like not getting the coronavirus. But so far so good. She's rocking it.
Mom, not to jinx you, but I think you're good. You're good.
That's right. My mom
actually,
is
don't stay indoors. Go outside in the sunshine, Mom.
That's right. Yeah, force everybody to do right. That. So those are some folks that I spend a lot of time talking with. I have a really close friend actually named Joel Gagne, who I dedicated my book Stand Out to. Joel is a good friend of mine from nearly two decades ago. We worked together on a gubernatorial campaign.
Oh, wow.
Back when I worked in politics. And so we've stayed in good touch.
That's,
so that's four.
That's the broadcast. That's good enough if you don't want to keep going. It's up to you. But
you know, I think... There's my girlfriend too.
I'm sure that's in the list there.
So. She's definitely in the list. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love it. That's great. Okay. How are you, Dori Clark, changing the world?
The way that I at least try to change the world, Michael, besides investing in the very best theater shows, is through my work. I really try to help talented people figure out how to get their voices elevated and their best ideas heard. Because we all know that it is a very different thing being good at what you do versus being known for what you do. And there's a lot of smart people out there that are really good at what they do. They make, you know, they make a big impact, or they could make a big impact. You know, they're certainly making an impact within their sphere, but they want to make an even bigger one, and they could. But the problem is that so often the discourse around how to get your ideas known gets sort of misinterpreted by the culture. Yeah. You know, it doesn't get talked about in the right ways. It's like, oh, it's an overnight success. Well, okay, obviously nothing is. Or like, oh, well, they've always been famous. Well, actually, no. People become famous and their ideas get known because they did certain things. What are those things? And so I have really spent the last decade trying to crack that code and to break down the process so that people can figure out, without obfuscation or without people, you know, sort of pulling up the ladder behind them, so that people can really understand what it takes to get their ideas heard so that they don't have to be banging their head against a wall forever.
I love it. That's a really important mission, and I probably need to go read some of your books there now. So.
Thank you, my man.
Okay, so let's see. The final question is, when we have interesting guests on the podcast, we like you to nominate other interesting guests. We usually talk to experts or entrepreneurs. I'm making a concerted effort to talk more about growth and automation, obviously, because it's in the name, but it doesn't have to be limited to that. So who would you, Dori Clark, like to nominate as a future guest of the Automate and Grow podcast?
You know, I mentioned her with my five people. The person that I know who is the absolute best, Michael, at growth and systems is my friend Jenny Blake. Great. She is a maniac, and she has spreadsheets for everything. She has processes for everything. She has a team in the Philippines. She's got a full stack systems hacker.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, that's great. All right, so Jenny Blake and her company, her book is called Pivot, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so Jenny Blake, you've been nominated by Dori to be a future guest to the Automate and Grow podcast. Dori, thank you again. I really enjoyed having you on. Come back anytime.
Thank you, my man. So good to have the chance to spend time with you.
This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode with Jenny Blake. Talk to you guys soon. Thank you.